Since we recorded our last episode, an issue has presented itself, and it was one that Anna and I felt that we needed to address. For those listeners who are outside of Canada, it is possible you haven't heard, though rightly so, it has made international news, and I feel it needs to continue to do so. A mass grave containing the remains of 215 children were discovered on the grounds of the former Kamloops Indian Residential School, a school that operated from 1890 until the late 1970s. If you aren't from Canada, you may not be aware that we have an extremely dark stain that continues to stain our nation in the Indian Residential School system. It was a system that was put in place to take children from homes, from their families, and to institutionalize them in schools in an effort to, quite frankly, eradicate and potentially use genocide to remove First Nations people from our country. It is a horrible stain. And for truth and reconciliation to truly work, this issue needs to come to the forefront. So please take a moment to learn more about this issue, whether you are a Canadian or not. It is an important topic that continues and must continue to be the forefront of our nation. And I personally can speak to the fact that my mind was blown away when I learned that residential schools were still in place until the 1990s, when I myself was in school.
Yeah. I think, like you said, Chris, is a really important conversation. Canucks were the first NHL team to acknowledge that, and they called it, you know, what it is, a genocide. And I think the first part of that path of truth and reconciliation, the truth part, is really important. So we need to keep talking and acknowledging that truth, and also we need to get the information there so that truth is acknowledged, and then tread that path towards reconciliation, because it's important work.
.5% was it? Is that what the current odds are of the Stanley Cup?
Well, and if you look at the round by round progression, the Stanley Cup favorite is the Vancouver Canucks.
Like, what a time to be alive!
Talking you through every goalie controversy, scoring slump, and draft lottery bust, this is the C4 Podcast on CanucksHockeyBlog.com. Here they are, the best starting lineup we could afford under the salary cap. Chris, Matt, Anna, and Adam.
Welcome to another episode of the C4 Canucks Hockey Podcast, brought to you by the Full Press Coverage Network and CanucksHockeyBlog.com. I am Chris at Lightforce, joined virtually as always by the better part of this show, Anna Forsyth at A4Say03. How you doing there, Anna?
Yeah, I'm doing good. Been watching some playoff hockey. It's kind of fun to watch non-North Division hockey occasionally.
I we were talking before we had hit record, before we sat down to record the show. A little bit actually came up, and instead of the anthems, our patron-only pre-show. I have watched a little playoff hockey, but not a whole lot. And I have to say, of the North Division hockey that I have seen, the Habs are apparently a good team.
I mean, are they good? We just don't know yet.
True.
As we record, they have like swept the Winnipeg Jets, but I still maintain that we don't actually know if they're a good team yet.
Well, they're going to face one of either the Vegas Golden Knights or the Colorado Avalanche, if I understand correctly. And I'm fairly confident they lose to either one of those teams.
Yep. Maybe they steal the game. Maximum two.
Well, but I say that, and Carey Price could do crazy things.
He can, but you know, like Canucks tried that before with Vegas, and Demko could only do so much.
True, true. I mean, I think if the story is written by the hockey gods, and it is a well-known fact that the hockey gods hate the Vancouver Canucks, mm-hmm. Tyler Toffoli is going to be lifting the Stanley Cup above his head.
Yeah. Yeah, we're going to see pictures this summer of Dodger Toffoli eating kibble out the cup, aren't we?
Yeah, that's totally what will happen. But enough of that type of conversation. Let's talk a little bit about the fabulous guest we have lined up for today's show. If you happen to be a subscriber to the C4 Weekly, which I've retitled the bi-weekly newsletter, because again, it's the off season. We're going to record a main show every 2 weeks. You already know who it is, but we've got Harmon Dial from The Athletic. He's a staff writer covering the Vancouver Canucks for The Athletic. He's going to be joining us shortly to talk a little bit about the season that was and some of his thoughts as the Vancouver Canucks go into the off season. So pretty excited that we've got him joining us today.
Yeah. We've said this before, but we love just having people that are smarter than us come on and explain things to us. So we invited Harmon and he's going to come on and do that.
Yeah. I mean, in regards to me, the bar is very low at inviting smarter guests. I mean, you at least give them a run for their money.
No, but you know, boy genius is, or man genius, I guess he is now, different level.
He is very smart. You know what? Why not throw it over to Harmon? As we let off the show, I am pleased to share that we are now joined by our special guest, Harmon Dial. Harmon, how are you doing?
I'm doing well, guys. How are you?
Yeah, oh, pretty good. Bad. Slightly better. Now we don't have to watch the Canucks every couple of days.
Ooh, that's a low blow.
Ooh.
But it's the truth.
But we are also probably doing a little bit better off because we ran into some technical difficulties. So thankfully we're able to overcome them, get you to join us here. The longest running Canucks podcast in the market. And I do this with every sort of new friend of the show that we gain. I ask this very difficult question. Why has it taken it so long or taken you so long to join us?
It's taken me so long to join you guys because it took you so long to ask.
I mean, that's a good response.
I mean, I'd like to throw back, well, if you replied to my DM, but then we're talking about a matter of days.
Yeah.
Yes.
So yeah. We could have reached out a long time ago, to be fair, because you've been on the scene a little while. You're an old vet now, really.
Oh, geez. Already now?
Yeah.
Yeah. Harmon Dial, grizzled vet of the Canucks scene or Canucks media scene. But why don't you introduce yourself to our listeners? It's possible there are some out there that don't know who you are. I don't know how that is possible, but I'm going to presume it's the case. So can you share with them how, first of all, you got into, you know, working with The Athletic and covering the Vancouver Canucks?
Yeah. So as you kind of alluded to, I cover the Canucks as a full-time reporter for The Athletic. My kind of niche initially coming up through the industry was analytics and being able to break down video and just overall being able to, whether it's evaluate individual players or the team's performance, kind of looking at it and trying to cover the team more from a deeper analysis perspective is what I always try and bring to the table. And I had been blogging for some years before I initially pitched The Athletic. I think now, I think it's almost 3 years ago now, to freelance and do a piece for them. And they liked the piece that I did. So I had a year of freelancing during the 2018-19 season. That would be Pettersson's rookie year. And then after that, they were looking to add to their staff. And so they tapped me on the shoulder and asked if I could join as a full-time reporter. And since then, I've tried to diversify my skill set, start doing deeper kind of features and more interviews and things like that as well. But yeah, I think my bread and butter has always kind of been analytics, video, and that's how I continue to try and do my work again at The Athletic.
Awesome. We've also, I believe, seen you on TV as an intermission panel guest from time to time, too.
Yeah, I think the first time I did that was not this past year, but the year before that, 1920. And then yeah, had was fortunate enough that Murph tapped me on the shoulder for a few times this season. So, I mean, anytime you get to go on the broadcast, it's a lot of fun. Definitely nervous, but hopefully I've gotten better and better as times go on. I remember the first time it was pretty nerve-wracking, not knowing like what camera to look at. And all that, but feeling more and more comfortable with it for sure.
Yeah, well, you looked very comfortable to me. I couldn't tell you if you were nervous. Pro. Yeah.
Thank you. It means a lot to hear that.
Yeah, it must be quite frenetic with, you know, Murph just calling out 1 minute. You got 1 minute to answer this like deeply analytical question.
Yeah, and it's the toughest part was there are, I think, two or three cameras, right? There's the one main central one. And then there's like one that's going to zoom in and look. And once you actually start talking, like they'll go to that camera view for the TV audience. So I remember the first time I was like, okay, like which camera do I look at? And Murph was like, okay, just look at me, which honestly is probably not the best advice because people were telling me after, like, why didn't you look at the camera after the first period? But then I figured out like, okay, the rhythm of it, like looking at which camera, and then Murph makes it easy in terms of like before prep wise, you know, obviously we don't rehearse or like have lines or anything, but he'll just kind of say like, okay, I'll ask you this first. And then I'll go to, you know, sat after for that. So he makes it super easy to work with. And Murph's just an all around beauty. So.
Yeah. I mean, he's a total pro. I remember when I figured out that he was looking not at the guests, but like slightly in front of them so that the camera didn't see the back of his head all the time. And I was just like, that is so slick.
That is so genius. I actually didn't even realize that.
Yeah, he's probably making it seem like he's looking at you, but he's like looking out ahead of you because, yeah, otherwise it would look weird.
Here's Anna breaking on the fourth wall.
Yeah, I study Murph. That's my specialty.
But no, with you here, we figured who better to ask than Harmon. What happened to the Vancouver Canucks this season? You have 1 minute and I need a very detailed analytical answer.
Yeah, so I think when you look at the pillar, there's some of the key pillars for the Canucks' success in 1920, it was number one goaltending, number two special teams, specifically the power play. They had the best sort of, you look at the raw power play goal differential, like in terms of efficiency, they were only top five, but pure differential goals for and against, they led the NHL there. So you had goaltending, the power play, and then just a lethal top six that could make up for a bottom six that wasn't really able to hold their own particularly well. And so I think when you look at each of those pillars, I think for the first month or 6 weeks before Demko really got in a tear, the goaltending was average, I think, as opposed to what Markstrom did last year, where he was Vezina caliber. And then number two, and I think this is the most important one, was the power play, right? It just never really got going. And especially when you look at the second unit, they chipped in with 17 goals last year. I think this year it was something like three or four. And in addition to that, first unit didn't produce as much. And that's important because the Canucks, despite them making the playoffs last year or in 1920, they were outscored at 5-on-5, right? So this was a team that was just kind of treading water at even strength and then able to make up the difference with elite special teams. And so when you take away the elite special teams, that was a significant dent. And then on top of that, through the start of the season, you know, this roster is built so that it's over, you know, they're over-reliant on the top six. They're over-reliant on their best players. And we had Pettersson kind of stumble out of the gate through January, through the first 10 games or so. And when that kind of happened, I mean, you look at the numbers of Lotta line in 1920, they were top five first line in the NHL. And this year, they were more middle of the pack when I studied goal differential for the top first lines in the National Hockey League. So I think ultimately it was a combination of, you know, many factors, but if you were to compare the formula from last year, it was, you know, the top guys weren't, you know, they weren't able to save a supporting cast that, you know, the contributions of the bottom end of the roster have more or less been constant in that they haven't really been able to chip in much. It's just the top six wasn't able to dig them out of that hole, both at 5-on-5 and on special teams. And so that's, you know, part of the reason why they struggled so significantly this season.
Yeah, I'm curious as to whether, like, how many of those pillars are a this year problem, and how many do you see, like, repeating themselves? Like, Canucks tend to get, like, really hot and then slow down, and obviously they struggled to start the season. Power play, do you think that was, like, a personnel issue, a coaching issue? I'm wondering how we, like, whether we see these pillars, like, crumble again next year, or you see it as like a COVID kind of injury type issue.
Yeah, well, of course, for the second half of the season, COVID played. We could tell the guys were just sapped. I think, you know, for sure that component, they're going to be clear of that. And then as it pertains to the power play, the Canucks have the personnel. When you look at their top end talent to really click, especially now that you'll hopefully have Pettersson back healthy for a full season. So I think special teams, you can realistically count on it to bounce back. I think overall the Canucks are better on a true talent level basis than they showed this past year. And so especially when you look at, for instance, the second power play unit, as guys get healthy, as you hopefully are able to supplement your depth, you may have pieces like you already had Höglander on the second power play unit, but now you'll have Rathbone on the second power play unit, hopefully, if he can break the team out of camp, which he should. You'll have, hopefully, Podkolzin on the second unit. So not only do I expect the first unit to rebound and start producing a lot more, but I think the second unit is capable of chipping in with a little bit more consistent production as well. And then, so outside of just special teams, I think you're going to see Pettersson and Hughes bounce back and be better than they were this past year, especially Hughes with his defensive play. I think, you know, with a lot of young D-men as they come up through the National Hockey League, especially those that are offensively calibrated, there are bumps along the way. There are obstacles to overcome. It isn't always development-wise a linear path. And so, I think compared to his sophomore year, Hughes, I'm sure, will have learned a lot. And I think as the team's overall environment improves, I think we'll see Hughes bounce back defensively and from a 5-on-5 play driving perspective as well. And so I think that's enough to where you look at the Pacific Division this coming year. If as we expect, they go back to the regular divisional alignments, I think that's going to be a sneaky sort of factor that works in the Canucks' favor as well, where you look at outside of Vegas, there are no locks to make the playoffs. I mean, you've got maybe Edmonton. And after that, you've got Calgary with the mess of the season they had. I know a lot of people are saying, you know, you can't count the Kraken out yet, which I agree with, but I also don't think that they're going to be as fortuitous as Vegas was in terms of, you know, Dale Talon gifting 2/3 of the top line and, and, you know, like Pittsburgh giving them a second round pick to take Marc-Andre Fleury. Like, I don't think they're going to be as fortunate as Vegas was, but I mean, you've got Seattle and then what, you've got the California teams that are all sort of stuck in rebuilding situations. And so I think the field is wide open for a team like the Canucks, where, I mean, it's definitely not going to be easy. It's almost going to be like the 1920 season, where for them to get into the playoffs, it's going to be a dogfight. It's going to be scrappy. But there is still a path there for them. I don't think they're as poor as they showed this past year.
You know, thinking back to that earlier comment sort of about the pillars, and we think about the 1920 season, not 1920. Every time I hear that, I'm like, I'm old enough to possibly remember. But the 2019-20 season, you had the strength in it that you had with Markstrom. You had Pettersson, you know, leading the way up front. You had offensive production. And while the Vancouver Canucks were sort of in the dogfight to make the playoffs prior to the pandemic shutting the season down, we saw quite a bit come to light in the bubble. You had a healthy Vancouver Canucks roster and a team that was able to string together some wins, get some confidence, and come within a game of getting past Vegas. But when we think about this season, there were weakened pillars. And despite that, the Vancouver Canucks weren't truly out of it in the North Division. If we were to sort of take the suggestion of some that, well, if the Vancouver Canucks happened to be in a Pacific Division, they would have made the playoffs. Is there truth to that, do you think, for this past year, if we were to rewrite history? Or is it just indicative of more of how the North Division was somewhat equally strong and weak? I mean, it was quite clear. You had teams at the top, and then you had a mess of teams below.
Yeah, I still think, like, when you look at the North Division, that was probably the weakest as well. So I don't know how much, like, if you replayed last season and, you know, the performance-wise, all the teams were the same, except you just kind of realigned them and did it that way. I don't know if the outcome would have been much different because of the same kind of factors that ultimately went wrong. But again, moving into next season, you're almost going to have to, you're able to reset a lot of these pillars. And especially with a guy like Thatcher Demko, now that he's really dialed himself in as a steady starter, you know, I think goaltending is going to be more stable. And so to me, the biggest thing is if the Canucks can just find a way to hold serve at 5-on-5, that's always the biggest question to me. Because again, in 2019-20, they were a team that got outscored at 5-on-5, and that's interesting to note, because when I looked at previous instances of teams that were able to make the playoffs despite getting outscored at 5-on-5, a lot of them showed the majority of them regressed the following year. So that's not actually, despite the pillars having worked in 2019-20. And despite me liking their potential odds going into next season, depending on what work they're able to accomplish in the offseason, it's also important to remember that they need to be a lot better of a 5-on-5 team, because the pillars that worked for them before, it's almost as if everything needs to go perfectly right. And sometimes that just, as we witnessed this past year, sometimes it just doesn't always play out that way. And so, again, I like their potential playoff odds going into this season, but there's definitely a lot of work on Jim Benning's plate, I think, to really build out particularly a sturdy third line, figuring out the situation on the back end. So they're a team that can at least tread water at 5-on-5. They don't have to be one of the top 10 teams, but they have to be at least competent and especially on the defensive end, learn to kind of shore things up there.
The thing about the defense and obviously offensive production, there are going to be tough decisions to be made going into this offseason. I mean, we heard in the postseason presser that Jim has the support of ownership to make some of these tough decisions. But does the Vancouver Canucks salary cap even empower him to make a tough decision or not? I mean, or is it a matter of we're going to be in a tough year or two until such time as cap flexibility provides the opportunity and freedom to build, you know, that winner that we want, as opposed to the perennial dogfighter.
Yeah, and that's the dilemma the Canucks face this offseason, isn't it? Because once the club re-signs Pettersson and Hughes, I think my colleague Thomas Trantz kind of modeled it out in an article pretty recently. They're projected to have around $8 million in spending capacity, and they have a number of key holes that they need to shore up. So there isn't a lot of flexibility to work with. And even that scenario, I believe he accounted for a Jake Virtanen buyout that we kind of expect at this juncture. So outside of that, I'm not sure how much, as you kind of mentioned, flexibility there is for the club to really be aggressive, unless the team gets into considering, for example, a Braden Holtby buyout, or they try and, you know, look at the last year of, say, Jay Beagle or Anton Roussel's contracts and try and go to rebuilding teams and offer them sweeteners to take on those contracts. And that's where, again, you have that dilemma where whether it's a Holtby potential buyout or the idea of paying assets to give up one or to shed one of these contracts, or whether it's the idea of even moving the ninth overall pick for a player that can help now. The issue that I see is no matter how aggressive you really are, all you're going to be able to accomplish this offseason in all likelihood is improving this team to being playoff caliber. You're not going to turn this team into a contender overnight. And it's really 2022-23 where we've talked about this a lot, and Jim Benning himself mentioned it, right? I believe it was a February or March presser where he said, we need two more years to really build a formidable contender. And that's actually an accurate timeline. He's correct with that. But if that's the case, then the club's priorities need to be aligned that way. They need to be, if they look at 2 years from now and say, okay, that's when we can really be a contender, then you have to almost move backwards from that window, from that goal, and make your decisions accordingly. And what that means from a practical perspective is being diligent and not overspending in free agency. That means probably not trading your ninth overall pick for immediate help. That means, you know, just being very careful about the commitments you make this offseason probably means more or less turning to the bargain bin and trying to make addition. You know, it's not about the trying to make splashy acquisitions. It's probably more so about trying to find undervalued kind of diamonds in the rough and try and build out your depth that way and taking advantage of maybe expansion draft opportunities, going to maybe a team like Carolina and trying to pick up Warren Fogle and just making these smaller level moves as opposed to this big home run trying to find the next JT Miller type move, because it isn't the kind of year where I think you can really go all in beyond just making the playoffs. And that's, again, where you don't want to, like, I can understand why a GM in Benning's situation would want to be aggressive, because he's got a tremendous amount of pressure on him. But at the same time, if you're prioritizing actually winning a Stanley Cup, you've got to be careful not to be so aggressive this offseason that you potentially compromise your ability to go all in 2022-23, which is the year where you can actually contend for a cup, I think, if you play your cards right.
Very smart. We're going to take ourselves a short break here. You're listening to Harmon Dial on the C4 Canucks Hockey Podcast, brought to you by the Full Press Coverage Network and CanucksHockeyBlog.com.
Take hitting out of the game. You can't hit anymore, so don't do it.
The unsportsmanlike conduct, I want to get an explanation on that.
No kidding.
Because how do you get suspended for unsportsmanlike conduct?
Plus interference. There's no interference there. He had the puck.
Now, Madison never ever did that before. Now, why did he do it? And that? Because he was mad.
Well, your early favorite for the Calder Trophy, that's for sure. Elias Pettersson, you might even say your early favorite for the Hart Trophy.
Just to get back to your question, Elias is going to play plenty. He's going to get a lot of power play time. And yeah, I'm concerned about our offense. We lost 200-point players, and we've got to find a way to score.
I think we can use what you had ended off our last segment with as a good segue into this offseason. And a topic that I'm curious about is the expansion draft. Obviously, the Seattle Kraken will be picking a player off of the Vancouver Canucks roster. Who do you think that might be?
Yeah, there are of course, a few contenders. I think when you, first of all, you kind of have to map out who the Canucks would protect. And I think there are six up front that seem like practical locks. I think that would be Pettersson, Miller, Besser, Horvat, Pearson, and then probably Tyler Motte. And then the seventh is where you start to, there are question marks, whether, you know, is it going to be a guy like Matthew Highmore? Would it be Cole Lind, Zach McEwen, Jonah Gadjevich? And so I think that's actually one of those protection slots that the Canucks probably look to monetize, because I don't think they're particularly like the kind of audition that Colin had at the end of the season. I don't think they were impressed by his skating. I think you could tell by the first couple steps that he's still got some work to do there. And then in addition to that, we heard Jim Benning pointedly emphasized on multiple occasions how they want to add speed to their bottom six. And that's, of course, qualities that both Lind and Gadjevich don't possess. So I don't know how high the Canucks are on those guys. I think if you're Seattle, it's one of those scenarios where I think, you know, once you move beyond the forward group and you look at the back end, it's even bleaker there in terms of options if you're the Kraken, because Hughes and Rathbun are exempt, right? So the Canucks, like they might protect Schmidt, they might protect Myers, and then you Levy, and then you don't really have a lot to pick from. And then, you know, of course, goaltending-wise, Canucks are going to protect Demko. So I think they're probably, if I'm Seattle, I'm probably looking at a forward. And then, you know, maybe it's, depending on who the Canucks ultimately decide to pick with that or protect with that seventh slot, maybe it's a Colland, maybe it's a Highmore, maybe it's a McEwen. You're probably looking at one of those fringe prospects or close to replacement level kind of players that the Kraken would be targeting. And that's why ultimately this is such an opportunity for the Canucks, because you can tell that they don't have, because of some of the key players that they don't have to protect. We mentioned Hughes and Rathbone on the back end, Hoglander and Podkolzin, of course, on up front that are exempt from process. That's why they have the opportunity to look at those extra slots and try and poach players from other teams.
Yeah, I'm curious whether that you see any value in, and I guess any reality of Jim Benning and team being able to like wangle Meyer's contract off the books or Holtby's contract off the books and like huge contracts off the books, but also huge gaps in the team if they were able to shift one of those less desirable contracts, whether there were like Canucks have the kind of negotiating skills and there are things in the market that could replace those players.
Yeah, well, I think for starters, I don't see the Canucks having the appetite of trying to move Myers. And even if they did, that's one of those contracts where in a flat cap environment, I think you're looking at, he has 3 years left at $6 million per. That's just a really, really tough contract to move. I mean, you look at Patrick Marleau, I think a couple seasons ago, where Toronto gave Carolina a first-round pick, and Marleau only had 1 year left at $6 million. So that would be, I think, very expensive to try and shed. Now, albeit the difference there is Marleau is a player that he wasn't really going to play for Carolina, and that was one of those circumstances where Carolina was going to buy him out, whereas at least Myers could play minutes for a prospective team. But even then, Mark Stahl, I think, made just around, I want to say 5.5, I think 5.7 to be precise, with 1 year left. And the Rangers had to give up, I think, a second round pick, if I'm not mistaken, for that, something along those lines, where it was, again, still, it's such a tough environment to move money is what I'm trying to say. And so Myers, I think, you know, even if they did want to move him, they'd have difficulties. And the number two with Braden Holtby, I think that's one of the interesting ones where it's not just the cap hit that Holtby has at 4.3, but it's the fact that his contract is backloaded and he's owed $5.7 million in hard cash. And that's going to make it tougher to move him on the trade market because, again, we're living in a reality where a lot of these ownership groups have been losing money because of the pandemic. And I don't know that any ownership group is going to be eager to take on $5.7 million in salary for a backup goaltender at this stage in Holtby's career. We're talking about a player that for two consecutive seasons now, yes, Holtby is a great veteran presence, and maybe there's a chance he rebounds. He's got a tremendous pedigree and track record, but the last couple of seasons he hasn't really been he was below 900 the year before coming to Vancouver, and he was right around that mark this past season. So I still think that's a tough contract for Vancouver to move as well. And if the Canucks are looking to move him or sort of figure out a way to create cap relief with his contract, I'd guess that a buyout would be a more realistic option. And that's, again, where you enter that dilemma where, you know, buying Holtby out would clear a decent chunk of change, but the penalty would also be $1.9 million for the year after. And again, we talked about the year after, 2022-23, that being the year where you can really go all in. And so that's the question you have to ask yourself. do you want to carve out extra cap space this offseason to try and field a playoff competitive team at the expense of you're going to have less flexibility to take a more ambitious swing the year after? And that's where ultimately for me anyway, I would hope that they do not buy out Holtby, because I think that the club should be looking to prioritize 2 years from now and that window to really contend as being more important than simply making the playoffs this coming season. But I wonder if the organization views those potential tough decisions through the same lens that I do.
Yeah, I just kind of want to build off that briefly. I'm wondering, is there a middle of the road option where you invest in these sort of short-term bargain basement contracts and make and push for the playoffs? Do you think, is the benefit of that keeping players happy, keeping ownership happy, and kind of is it worth the risk of like pushing too hard and over investing? Or do you think it's better to just kind of risk the players being unhappy and management being unhappy in order to invest for the future?
Yeah, so I think for starters, I mean, if we're talking about the players, I think the biggest thing is today's generation of athletes, they want to, I think, be in the loop. And I think it's, if you took a more conservative approach this offseason and you communicated a clear vision and explained and walked through the rationale of, okay, we're going to make additions this offseason. We're not going to be super aggressive and say trade our ninth overall pick. And the reason we're not going to do that is to preserve our ability to help you guys contend for a cup the year after. I think that message is digestible for a player if you've clearly laid out that blueprint, if you're ready to walk them through and explain that, you know, look at all this money coming off the books and this is how we're going to do it. And you show that commitment to the highest ambition of, again, at the end of the day, that ambition is winning a cup. And you're not telling them, let's do it 3 years from now. You're telling them we're still going to make additions this offseason. We're still going to help build a playoff contender for this season. We're just going to ensure that we don't, blow our budget and go overboard. And so I think that would resonate. And I think there is a middle of the road option. And that kind of middle of the road option isn't just to go sign these one year, $1 million contracts. I mean, those are opportunities that I think the Canucks should explore. But for instance, we talked about expansion. I think that needs to be an avenue where the Canucks try and find an opportunity where, again, Carolina, I mentioned it earlier, if you map out their sort of expansion scenario, they're only going to be able to protect one of Jesper Fast or Warren Fogle. And if they ultimately protect Fast, who they just signed last offseason, then Fogle is there for the taking. And so that's one of those circumstances where whether it's a guy like Fogle in Carolina or Mason Appleton in Winnipeg that we're just watching the postseason now, these are middle six forwards that are both 25 years old. In the case of Fogle, skates really well, forechecks hard, would fit the identity of what this team's looking for, add secondary scoring ability, can slide up and down your lineup, solid two-way player. Appleton, sort of same sort of way. I think both those players would be kind of, you're looking for them to kind of fill the Tanner Pearson kind of roles. And that's what the Canucks need to build out a third line and continue bolstering their depth and supporting cast. And so that's, you know, those kinds of players, they're not only going to help you this coming season, but they're young enough that they can help you the year after for years after. And so they can be long-term fits. And so for that reason, I think that's one of those situations where you could justify, say, giving up, if you want to give up a second or third round pick and kind of build out a package that way for one of those players. Like that's where I think you can still be you can still be proactive. It's not just you're going to sit on your hands and do nothing. You can still explore opportunities like that. So if you did, let's say you acquired one of Fogle or Appleton, and then in addition to that, and then that's where you look at more of your bargain options That's where, of course, you're going to add Pod Colson to the mix. You take the approach that way. I still think that you're able to, again, because of how wide open the Pacific is going to be, because of how I'd expect the power play, because of how I'd expect Pedersen Hughes to bounce back, I still think the club can be competitive for the playoffs. So I definitely think that middle of the road option exists. And I mean, just look at the Florida Panthers this past offseason, right? Like that to me is the model example. And we don't often say this about Florida because they typically haven't been fairly well run, but Bill Zito had a really good offseason. You look at how they rebuilt the supporting cast of that team. They went out and they got essentially four top nine forwards in the offseason. They got Anthony Duclair. They got Carter Verhaeghe. They got Alex Wenberg. And I guess Sam Bennett was a mid-season acquisition. But so three top nine forwards that they were able to add. Verhaeghe was near a point per game. Duclair was scoring at a solid middle six, solid top six clip. Wenberg, I think, scored like 17 goals. And all those players, they were kind of the reclamation project kind of tier. Or sorry, the fourth guy that was actually Patrick Hornqvist. They actually got rid of that terrible Mike Matheson contract and turned that into Patrick Hornqvist, who had a great season for them, right? So you look at what the Panthers were able to get, four top nine contributors right there. And what did they ultimately spend? I mean, Verhaeghe was dirt cheap. Duclair was dirt cheap. Wenberg, I think, was in the 2 to 3 million range on I think it was a 1 year contract. And then how did they get Hornqvist? They traded out of a bad contract. Now, is replicating that in terms of, wow, you're going to expect now to get three top nine forwards and not really spend much? Is that realistic? No, but could you maybe get creative and whether it's through the trade market or whether it's through free agency, try and identify some of these undervalued options? I still think it's possible. So I think it's all, I think you just have to kind of rely on your pro scouting staff that way and kind of take it from there. So, I mean, for that reason, I do think definitely there is a middle ground there that would be available for the Canucks to kind of explore there.
Awesome. It's great to hear all of this insight. And I really wish we had more time to keep you here, Armin. We'll have to get you back on another episode to talk about the Canucks moves in the offseason, as well as to preview next season, probably closer to August, September. But for our guests, if they're looking to find you online, where can they locate you?
Yeah, they can find me at, of course, The Athletic, and then on Twitter, at HarmanDial2. That's HarmanDial2. So yeah, you can find me there.
Awesome. Well, thanks again, Harman, for joining us. We'll be right back here. You're listening to the Seymour Canucks Hockey Podcast on CanucksHockeyBlog.com and the Full Press Coverage Network. Pulling back the curtain a little bit here, we alluded to there being technical issues before getting Harman on. And what we had to do is we had to actually switch over to using Zoom to record. We actually use a platform called Squadcast to record the main show normally. But in using Zoom, we had ourselves a very strict time limit, and we truly did run out of time with them. It wasn't like I was trying to chase Harman away. We had more questions we wanted to explore.
Yeah, you weren't doing like a very meta joke about Tyler Toffoli. We did run out of time.
We did run out of time. That is true. It we'll get him back. And as to when, I'm hoping before the start of next season, once we've got obviously the expansion draft out of the way, the entry draft out of the way, free agent frenzy out of the way, and any offseason moves Jim makes out of the way, Harman can come in and help us all digest that and prepare us for what will be an interesting season, sort of from our seats or our vantage point. There's some bits and bobs we wanted to get into with this show, simply because they are relevant. Is the fact that the Seattle Kraken are obviously a thing. They are signing players. I mean, they have yet to go and make deals. And that's something that I think, Harman started to touch on. He didn't feel that the Kraken will be as good as the Golden Knights happen to be. And
yeah, you know, some of that has to do. Shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on you.
I wonder, you know, how many, you know, phone calls, you know, Francis has received or made as to making trades. I mean, the team has technically been a team for a few weeks now. So there could be deals, and we haven't seen any of the sort of non-playoff teams make any of those. One of which could be the Vancouver Canucks, and that's something that Harmon had gotten into. But being that the Kraken are a thing, we felt it would be important to learn more about the Seattle Kraken, and as a result, you'll want to stay tuned to a number of our episodes this offseason, because we've got a variety of guests lined up to really rev up a rivalry that we hope there will be between the Vancouver Canucks and the Kraken. Plus, I can't speak for you, Anna, but I'm pretty sure this might be an accurate statement. They might be our favorite team not named Vancouver Canucks.
I mean, we'll see. Because we'll see. But like, whilst the border isn't open, I feel like we can just talk some trash,
true,
get some information. And they can't get us, so.
Yeah. Do you think, like, so this is something that I've seen Whitecaps fans use when they've gone down to Seattle or Portland, if they travel into any of the Cascadia match derby matches. Chants like, we've got healthcare, and stuff like that. You think that will make an appearance?
Maybe. I feel like we could add that to the Lash Out is repertoire for sure.
Yeah. Well, we should point out as well, it doesn't look like there'll be a plethora of Vancouver Canucks fans simply showing up en masse to watch the Kraken, because they're calling their season ticket holder list the High Tide or something like that. And from all appearances, they're like super popular and likely selling out.
Oh yeah. I mean, it's a hot ticket for sure. So we will get down and watch them, but at some stage. But
yeah,
I'll be.
But like en masse, like a large.
Yeah, like no, it's Anna not going to be Chris like
shouting from the nosebleeds. Isn't going to have the same effect.
It's not going to be like an Anaheim game where it seems to be, or an LA game where like Canucks fans will literally just take over half the rink. Cool.
Yeah, I mean, this is going to sort of get to the reality is that the Kraken will probably have an easier opportunity to come up to Vancouver to watch a game than us Canucks fans will have going down the highway to watch them down there.
So. Do you think they'll join in when we start a fire Benning chant?
Probably not. If they were, and I mean, they're intelligent fans. They'll be like, you know, it'll be like fire Benning, and then the Kraken fans, please don't do that.
Yeah, exactly. Call and response. That's nice.
In fact, the please don't do that, they'll be also like those who are very pro Benning joining in. So it'll just be madness.
Yeah, I think there might be some can we play you every week type chants.
Yeah. Oh, but anywho, with this show, I mean, it's been a while since we've had a text message into the C4 text line. And for those that don't know, the number is 604-200-6201. That's 604-200-6201. We got one from a friend of the show, Hercules, and we were giving him some guff on IOTA that he didn't sign his text message, which is true. He didn't sign it at the end. He signed it at the start.
So really, it was just us being not observant.
Yeah, I mean, horrible podcast hosts that we are. But he says, hey, C4 Duo, your fave Ducks Canucks fan Hercules here. As you guys will likely be recording on the 18th anniversary of my favorite sports moment, June 7th, 2003, I figured it was a great time for you two to spill it on your favorite sports moments. Yes, Anna, football and cricket are sports and included. I think it's no secret that mine is Paul Kariya's goal after the Stevens hit in Game 6 on the date above. And Discord probably knows that the mention of Paul generally gets me hot and bothered like Goodbranson does for Anna, or Avoiding Books does to Chris. Cheers to you two, /3, if Harmon is still there. Now, Harmon, we had to let him go, but I am sure he would appreciate the cheers from you there, Hercules.
I mean,
sports moment. My favorite sports moment.
I mean, one, can I just say accurate, like with Erica Branson feels. That's exactly how I feel. I mean, for me, I'm going to say I'm not going to limit to moments I was there for. So I will say Slaying the Dragon is up there for me as a Canucks fan.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sort of thinking through Slaying the Dragon would probably be there. I mean, a lot of them are hockey related, like golden goal during the Olympics. Yeah. That was up there. But if I recall, and this is the memory, unfortunately, is starting to fade. But when the Vancouver Canucks had sort of gone through one of their doldrums in the 2000s, essentially, you know, post-Keane years, Brian Burke had taken over and the team had finally made the playoffs. But that season where they did make the playoffs, my dad had picked up a bunch of tickets cheap. We had like four seats. Canucks were essentially giving like crazy ice pack deals.
Wow.
And we happened to have four tickets to a Vancouver Canucks game against the Los Angeles Kings end of season, which matchup-wise made no sense until such time as the season went along. And this game, if the Vancouver Canucks were to win, clinched a playoff spot. And arguably when the team had not been in the playoffs for some time and suddenly had some, you know, power behind it with the West Coast Express, the barn was a hopping. I remember we got there early, like doors opened, and within 5 minutes, upper bowl and lower bowl were full, which is unheard of at Vancouver Canucks games. That's how... It was almost like playoff atmosphere.
Right.
And the lights were, you know, had barely come on and people were already cheering loudly and, you know, saying we want the cup because as Canucks fans, we don't even make the playoffs and we're still demanding Stanley. But it was just the energy in the building. It was so unbelievably awesome. And I think, I want to say it was like Harold Drucken scored the goal late in the game to like win it.
So, yeah,
like to clinch.
Yeah.
Oh, it was electric.
That's pretty cool. Yeah, I mean, as far as other sports goes, England winning the World Cup was so dramatic because it was such a big narrative.
Well, that was a while ago.
That was 2 years ago.
Oh, we were talking cricket.
Cricket, yeah. I don't care about international football at all. And yeah, I don't really have a football moment because Arsenal have won a few FA Cup finals. But they haven't won the league since 2004. And that was an incredible achievement. They went the whole season unbeaten, but I couldn't pinpoint an actual moment in that. Yeah. The whole season was just incredible. So, yeah, I would say the Cricket World Cup and Slaying the Dragons up there for me.
Yeah. I'm just sort of reading the text message again, and he, Herc points out that I'm avoiding books does to Chris. So it's not that I avoid books.
It's specifically the Harry Potter series.
Correct.
Give you your due.
I'm currently reading a book called Press Reset, which is about the video game industry. I have a copy of The Anthropocene Reviewed from John Green that I'll be reading next. A signed copy. It's just like a basic, you know, like initial signature. That arrived last week, so I'll be reading it next. So I do read books.
Yes. I mean, that's better than me. I'm currently reading Wisden Cricket Magazine. But my next book is Friday Night Lights, which has been recommended by many people on Canucks Twitter, and that's going to be the next one.
Yeah, cool. But Hercules, thanks for the text message. And again, for those of you who want to drop a text message, or you can actually call and leave a voicemail as well. If you leave a voicemail, we'll just play the voicemail directly on the show. That number again is 604-200-6201. 604-200-6201. Now, Hercules is also one of our patrons. And Anna, it appears we have a new member of the C4 Patron Club. And the name looks familiar. Can you tell our listeners who it happens to be?
Yep. So our newest patron is my mother, Susan Forsyth. So thanks, Mom. And just like any other patron, you're getting a shout out. So we appreciate you. You keep the lights on. I mean, you also kept the lights on for me growing up. So appreciate that too.
Yeah. See, she was a patron of the show before she was patron of the show and before the show was the show. But I remember when I saw the notification and her name come in, I'm like messaging you. I'm like, oh my God, Anna, your mom, let's give her a shout out. Like, we're going to do it next episode. And you are like, no, we should follow the rules. There's no special treatment here.
We follow the rules. You know, we're good, Canadian podcasters. So,
yeah, but no, thank you, Susan. Thank you for supporting the show. Obviously it means a lot to both of us, but I know it means a lot to Anna, and really all of our patrons. I sent all of you a note through Patreon. If you happen to not receive it, if you log in, you might have a notification there. But essentially I wanted to walk through, you know, what it's meant. We're coming up to a pretty solid anniversary. I mean, we are the longest running Canucks podcast, and I think it's pretty cool, Anna, that you and I are taking this sort of off season and this anniversary to really, you know, shake things up and take our show to the next level. So the reason that we can make that happen is all of you who support us on Patreon. If you know, this is something that might be up your alley, check it out, patreon.com/C4podcast. You know, the levels start from a buck and they head up. And when I talk about a buck, it's Canadian. So for those of you who are outside of this great, great wide nation, it might be a little bit cheaper than that with the exchange factored in. Tease more guests. Already done that. We've got some more coming out. You'll learn who that happens to be if you happen to be a subscriber of the C4 Biweekly. That comes out every second Friday. So you'll want to subscribe for that. To do so, just go to c4podcast.com/newsletter. You'll be able to go and sign up there. And if you are interested in leaving a review of the show, which reviews are awesome. First of all, we'll read them verbatim, so you can say all sorts of crazy stuff and I will read it. But it helps others find our show and helps surface it to those that might be interested. C4podcast.com/review is where you want to go to learn how you can go and promote our show through a word of mouth. And I mean, you could also go and tell your friends and family and help them subscribe too, and all that.
You know, Socially distanced, of course.
Yes. Well, things are sort of loosening now. So as long as you're following local health guidelines. That's right. As we look to wrap up this show, Anna, what fabulous words of wisdom do you have for everyone?
Thanks to Harmon for joining us. You know what? I'm a bit more optimistic after listening to him. He laid out a solid plan. So now we just have to have him back on and see if Jim Benning and co followed his advice.
You're optimistic. I agree. Harmon has a solid plan. He, unfortunately, however, is not Jim Benning. And maybe Harmon should be the Vancouver Canucks GM. I think he is bright enough. I think he is able to articulate his vision and can probably look beyond that day-to-day approach others tend to follow. But on behalf of Anna, A4Say0, through myself, Chris at Lightforce, you can find the C4 Podcast online on Twitter at the C4 Podcast, as well as c4podcast.com, our new website. So please check it out. We're out.